Good morning. I want to thank you for coming today. And some of you have come multiple days or all 3 days. And this has just been a real joy for me. And I appreciate it. I appreciate those who have brought food. And I have enjoyed that, as you have been able to tell, very much. Matt and Angel have been married for 8 years. But things aren't going well. Matt actually is dying. He's in the hospital. He's been there. They can't figure out what the problem is, but he's not meant for this world very much longer. And Angel, his wife, is there at his bedside. And Matt says, "Angel, there's something I've got to tell you." He can barely speak. She said, no, save your strength. You don't understand. "Angel, there's something I've got to get off my chest." No, she said, just relax, take it easy, be still. "No, you don't understand," he said. I've got to tell you. "Angel, I've been unfaithful to you." She said, "It's all right. I already knew about that. Why do you think I poisoned you?" Let's talk about a fair proofing our marriages. The Bible says in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 4, marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled. But, and watch this dramatic difference, but whoremongers and adulterers, or fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. And you can say, well, now, why is God so serious about sex? And the answer is, he's not trying to keep sex from us. He's trying to keep sex for us. And when he did, he built this thing called marriage, created two genders, and then constructed this thing called marriage. And then he built walls around it. And I'm telling you, some of the strongest language in the Bible is designed to protect our marriages. It's because he prizes marriage so highly. So how do you protect your marriage from adultery? How do you affair-proof your marriage? Now here's the first thing. You got to cultivate a good marriage. I want you to remember that when you first were engaged and you were about to get married, action followed feeling. That is to say that you felt a particular way toward this person, and then you wanted to be married to him or her. So you felt something first, affection and love and all of those emotions, and you acted on them, and that's marriage. You got married. But bear in mind that after you're married, then most typically that's turned around, where I have feelings I want in my marriage. I want a great marriage with you. And so I act in a particular way in anticipation of those feelings. So instead of feelings producing actions, it's reversed. And now actions, we do the right things in anticipation of the feelings to have the kind of marriage. I want you to remember that marriage is a contract. When you got married, you signed those papers, and it's very much like other kinds of contracts. It's not a vow. Getting married is not a vow about how you will feel in 10 years. You can't predict how you will feel in 10 years. A marriage contract is about how you will behave in 10 years. That's what I'm promising. That's what I'm vowing. This is what I will do. This is how I will act in my relationship with you. It isn't your love that sustains your marriage. It's your marriage that sustains your love. You make the commitment and then you stick with it because that's what you vowed to do. Now, in the process, I declare to you that you haven't enough time to live on that. You don't have enough time in your life to live in a crummy marriage. And when I say that, I'm not advocating that you get out of your marriage. I'm just saying you've got to work at it. Good marriage, no matter what your age is going to be challenging sometimes, and you've got to work at it. Don't be satisfied with a mediocre marriage. Always pursue a great marriage. Always pursue a better marriage. Number two, be the best Christian you can be. I'm convinced that the best husband in the world is a faithful Christian. Best wife in the world is a faithful Christian. You take the kind of principles that will make a man a great Christian, he'll be a great husband. If you were compatible enough to get married in the first place and both of you will serve God faithfully, I'm telling you, you'll have a great marriage. What about Ephesians 4 and 32, for example? This is not about marriage. This is just about being a Christian. Be kind one to another. Are you kind? Were you kind this morning to your spouse? Are you hard to live with? What this says is, be kind one to another, tender-hearted. Are you tender-hearted? This is not about being a husband or wife. This passage is just about being a Christian. Be kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Are you a forgiving person or are you a grudge holder in your marriage? If you don't know how to forgive, you'll never see the backside of a good marriage. Is that a true statement? Because you know what you did? You up and married a human being, and so did your spouse. How long were you married to your husband before you learned he does dumb things sometimes? Do considerate things for your spouse and prioritize intimacy. So you can be married for a while, and sometimes sex, you take it for granted, and you shouldn't do that. You want to keep close and cultivate a good marriage. Make sure that your sexuality is something that's an important priority in your marriage. What you ought to do is to sometimes flirt with your husband. And sometimes, you know, you may go somewhere with your husband to eat with another family, and you go up to the door, you know, just you and your husband standing there at the door, and he reaches to ring the bell, and as he pushes the doorbell, I want you to ease up to his ear and say, "When we get home, this is what I plan to do with you." Now, he's not going to taste his food that night. You know, and as the evening goes on, look at the time. It just gets right by, and we're going to have to be going, right? Put a note in his lunchbox or in his briefcase or whatever. Put a note in his pocket on his way to work and say, "When you get home, these are my plans for you, big boy." And I tell you what, he won't get anything done that day because he's going to be thinking about you. Now, I ask you this question. What's wrong with that? Why shouldn't he be thinking about you? You ought to flirt with your husband. Gentlemen, if you weren't here in the session about how to love a wife, I want to encourage you to get the CD and practice those things. What's it about? It's about cultivating a good marriage. You've been opening the door for your wife? Why should you do that? She can open the door herself. And the answer is because you're a gentleman. And because you want to treat her like a lady because you want her to act like a lady, right? Huh? You didn't want to marry a man. You wanted to marry a girl. Treat her like a girl. Be polite. Be kind. Learn how to speak her language. Learn how to show affection to her in ways that she will understand. 1 Corinthians 7 talks about intimacy. And it says, "Don't deprive one another except it be with consent for a time that you give yourselves to fasting and prayer. Then you come together again." Because Satan will tempt you for your incontinency or your lack of self-control. To the point that I'm making is, if you want to affair-proof your marriage, be sure that you're busy cultivating a good marriage and that sex is a big part of that. Now, here's number two. I want you to fear adultery. The problem with Christians having affairs, I want you to listen closely to this. This is critical. Isn't that Christians intend to commit adultery? It's just that they don't intend not to badly enough. So, no pornography. The use of pornography is a sin against God. And if someone in this room is struggling with pornography and you've got an addiction, I'll be happy to talk to you about some answers about how to work on that. I don't have time right now, but you've got to get rid of that. It will distort the sexuality and the closeness in your marriage. And I had a man come to me recently, and he said, "Glenn, I've got a problem. Can we talk?" I said, "Of course we can." He said, "You see, my wife has put on a few pounds, and it's driven me to pornography." I said, "Why?" You know what, in counseling, if you're ever going to help somebody, sometimes you got to really look them right in the eye and say it. Somebody's got to say it. Well, sir, brother, I know plenty of men whose wives have put on a couple of pounds, and they're crazy about them. Your wife didn't drive you to pornography. Your pornography is taking you away from your wife. And you've got to repent of this sin and get rid of this wickedness. God gave you a woman, and she's got everything that you need. And you need to treasure her and love her and quit wrecking the trust that is the taproot of good marriage, because you're messing up here. You're destroying your home. Stop it. Don't put yourself in danger. I grew up in a preaching family. And so my father, well, and his father was a preacher before him, and my son's a preacher after me. I mean, that's all we know how to do. And we had women rules. I don't know. I don't think they were ever written down. I don't know that they were ever written. But we knew the women rules. The women rules are, and it sounds a great, you know, Mike Pence, you know, came across with his women rules. And boy, he got a lot of heat. They just hated him because of his women rules. And truth is, I've been having those women rules all my life. The women rules. Don't counsel a woman alone in your office with the door closed. I just won't do it. Don't do it. Don't counsel a woman at the church building if there's nobody else there. Just don't do it. Don't go to lunch alone with a woman. Now, I'm not talking about 85-year-old Sister Jones or Sister Brown. You know what I'm talking about. And if I go to somebody's, if I'm out visiting people who have visited our services or whatever, and I'm visiting and I go to somebody's house and knock on the door and the wife says, "Oh, I'm so glad to see you. My husband's in Albuquerque. He'll be back in a week. Come on in and have a cup of coffee." You know what? I appreciate that, but I just want to tell you, we're glad to have you come visit us, and if I can answer any questions, and I hope you have a nice day. God bless you, right? Because I'm not going in that apartment. Do you hear what I'm saying? If you don't want to fall down, don't walk in slippery places. Next, keep your closest friendships of the same gender. I'm not saying it's wrong to have a friend that's of the other gender, but do you, in the church, you know where adultery happens? I hate this because I just hear it so much. You have two couples and they become friends in the church and they do things together. Anything wrong with that? No, that sounds great. And it's wonderful to have close Christian friends. But what happens if you're not careful, if you don't have some preventive guards that one husband just starts feeling very, well, you know, y'all are just close. We take our vacations together. We're so close. But that one husband then, he starts feeling like that those natural barriers that you would typically have are pulled down because we just know each other. So we're all just such close friends. And suddenly what happens is that a friendship grows into something that it shouldn't be. Right? I was with a couple recently, and they're divorced now. And the wife discovered his adultery, and she said to him, "How could you do this?" And he said, "The temptation was just too strong to resist." If you don't want to fall down, stay out of slippery places. And what you ought to do is to keep friendship, by its very nature, involves some closeness of thought, some interchanging of ideas and inner ideas. You know, you confide things in a person who's a dear, close friend. Then you start doing that with a member of the opposite sex, and suddenly it can grow into something it should not. So I'm not saying don't be friends with members of the opposite sex. I'm saying make your best friends people who are of the same gender. Be protective of your marriage. Now I'm going to give you a rule. If I'm the teacher today, can I give a rule? I'm going to assert myself and do it. Okay. Here's the rule. Anytime you're with a member of the opposite sex and something is said or something is done that feels uncomfortable in the context we're discussing, say something right then of a positive nature about your spouse. I was in a hospital riding on an elevator one day, got to the bottom floor, big old tall hospital, riding up. I know the elevator rules, don't talk. Just listen to the music. That's what I was doing. Just the woman and me. And she said, "You smell good." She was right. I did. But I thought, you know, that made me feel uncomfortable. I'm not saying that she meant anything by it. I don't know. I don't think that. But it just gave me the... In Alabama, we say the heebie-jeebies. It gave me the heebie-jeebies. And I said, you know, I appreciate that. That's my wife's favorite aftershave. She gave me that. And the woman said, isn't that nice? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Open up the elevator. Have a nice day. Have a nice day. A couple of things happened. One is that had she meant anything unseemly, I declare to you, I poured cold water all over that. And the second thing, when I went home that night and put my head on that pillow, I didn't have to wonder if I had done anything physically or emotionally that jeopardized my relationship with Mrs. Colley. Right? Because I practiced the rule. And that's what you've got to do. Be protective of your marriage. Test your heart often. Adultery happens so often in the workplace. We're just close to people and we get to know them and we know them at their best. You know, I get up in the morning with Mrs. Wife and she has that bad breath. Then she sometimes, you know, in the mornings her hair does this thing, and right? And her, the way the clothing that she's wearing and all that, you know, and she's not at her best. And I go to work, you know, and then my coworker, she's amazing. The makeup is always perfect and the clothes, she's a great dresser and hair is always impeccable. You better be careful about compromises, right? What are the warning signs? Here are the red lights. Sharing more feelings and thoughts with my friend than I do my spouse. Am I telling confidential things to this person of the opposite sex? And am I finding myself confiding things? Because we're just real close friends, you know. That's a warning sign. 2, sexual tension. What's that about? Well, you know, it's when you go home from work and you think, I'm kind of looking forward to work tomorrow because I'll be working with my coworker there in that sweater. So I wonder if she'll wear that sweater. And that perfume, I wonder what perfume that is. And the way her hair smells when she's leaning over and we're working on that document together. And you know what that is? It's quicksand. It's sexual tension. Secrecy. Secrecy is when your wife walks by or your husband walks by and you tilt your iPad. You tilt your cell phone. Are we together? You understand what I'm saying? That is to say, I'm texting right now and I'm saying to myself, there's nothing wrong with this, but I wouldn't want my wife to see it because it might generate some questions. She might ask some questions and I couldn't let that happen. And here's Proverbs chapter 5, and this ought to be our mantra. This is our rule of thumb. Proverbs 5 and verse 8. And it's talking about a woman that a man is illegitimately attracted to. Remove your way far from her, and then don't go near to the door of her house. Let that be your law. If you ever feel sexual tension with a woman, with your coworker, what you ought to do is not try to get closer to her. What you ought to try to do is to get farther away from her. If you don't want to fall down, don't walk in slippery places. Communicate. That's 3. Here are the different levels of communication. Only one is really, really reserved for a great marriage. I want you to strive for it. There's the frivolous level of communication. The frivolous level is what we do in Alabama. We live kind of in the country, Mrs. Colley and I do. And you know, you're driving and you just drape your hand like this over the steering wheel. And when you pass somebody in the other lane, you do this. That's a whole paragraph right there, brother. You know what I'm saying? It's, good morning, how are you? I acknowledge you as a human being and I wish you well. Right there. That's it. That's the frivolous level. Then you have a fellowship or a factual level. Factual level is one step up, and it's what you have with your coworkers. Is that A, B, C, and D? No, that's E and F. Ah, got it, thanks. That's the factual level. Then you have the friendship or the fellowship level. Fellowship is what we're doing here. And we enjoy this conversation. We share thoughts and ideas. We laugh together. But then you get up to the friendship level. And in friendship, you start extending yourself some. You share things, maybe some feelings. But you get to the top one. And this level of communication is reserved for married people. But a lot of married people don't have it. And the reason is that that one spouse or the other does dumb things that prevents it, and the other one starts wearing a mask. This is the freedom level of communication. The freedom level is where I'm free to speak my fears, my desires, my dreams, my hopes, my innermost thoughts. There's nothing I can't say to you except what I can't deliberately hurt you. It's not that kind of freedom, but it's freedom to just open myself up, vulnerable to my spouse. And that ought to be what you strive for. It can only occur in an atmosphere of safety where you know that your mate is not going to rebuff you or censure you or chastise you or mock you or upbraid you. You've got to communicate. Share a hobby. It's okay with me if you have different hobbies. You know, he likes to rebuild car engines and she likes to paint with oils and pastels. That's okay. So long as you have something that you really enjoy doing together, find it. Find it and then cultivate it. Do you like shopping for antiques? Do you like collecting seashells? Do you like reading books? Do you like playing ping pong? Do you have what is it that the two of you enjoy doing together? Invest yourself and some money in that and then do it. Use your imagination. Want to prevent an affair? Oh, the devil is a liar. John 8:44, he's the father of lies. You've got to use your imagination. You got to use it. And here's what I mean. First, you will have given the other person a great power. The person, adultery is so stupid because of, among other things, you've given that person with whom you've committed that sin a great power over you. I mean, you don't think about that and you think, but she loves me so much, I can tell. We're just so drawn to, we're meant for one another. We didn't mean for this to happen, but it happened. We just love one another. She's just so wonderful. And I can tell you something, that there's a great chance that in a short amount of time, one of you is going to say, I can't do this anymore. This is wrong. I can't keep doing this. And what makes you think that if you say that to her, that she's going to just say, you're right, let's forget the whole thing? It very well may be that she'll be hurt by that and feel scorned, and as a result say, now let me tell you something. I can tell your wife about this just like that. And what about your children? You do what I say, or I will tell your children. Or how would you like for your employer to learn that you and one of your coworkers has been doing this? Now, what do you think about $10,000? And then I'll walk away. I'm telling you, you've given that person power that he or she could use against you. You'll become a chronic liar. Marriage cannot live without loyalty, but an affair can't survive with loyalty. It's all so silly, you know. You think that this person who will have an affair with you, who will commit adultery with you, and jeopardize your marriage, if you leave your marriage for that person, is going to have loyalty and stay with you? You think that? You got to face your children. Use your imagination. What will it be like to face them and say, Mom and I are getting a divorce? And you just go ahead and destroy those kids. You go ahead and look in their faces, but you ought to do it before you commit the sin. Imagine how that will be. And you're going to have trouble with God. Can you imagine eating the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week, having committed adultery that week? Or the week before? Go ahead, try to eat it. See if you don't choke. Go ahead and push it down your throat and think about that cross. And I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to have trouble with God. Now, is there forgiveness? The answer is yes. But I can tell you as we wind this up, because my time is gone, what happens is that when a man or a woman commits adultery, if the spouse learns about it, it's very common for the one who committed it to say, I'm so sorry, and then want to go back really quickly. I didn't mean for this to happen. That other woman doesn't mean anything to me. I'm telling you that you're the only one in my life for me. And what he wants to do is to jump out of there and go right back to where they were, because he apologized after all. If he could just go back to where they were before the commission of the adultery, that's what he wants. But of course, that's foolhardy. The fact is that trust in a marriage that is so deeply essential is something that is lost in a second, but takes a great deal of time to build back, if it ever can be. God bless you in your marriage, but remember that that fidelity is what you vowed. When you signed that document of matrimony, you weren't promising how you would feel 15 years from now. You were promising how you would behave 15 years from now. And may God bless you with not just a mediocre marriage, not a miserable marriage. May He give us all music in our marriages. God bless you.